Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio for all seasons and a lot of reasons, one being the arts and culture of Western Wisconsin. Let's immerse ourselves for a while. This is Spectrum West. Today, the music of Charlie Parr in the form of a new CD. We'll talk about the compilation and the evolution. Saturday's the 22nd Art on the Kinney Festival in River Falls, Kinney being the shortcut version of the Kinnickinnick River. We'll spend time with Steve Preisler, president of the River Falls Community Arts Base. Jim Oliver pulls double duty again. He'll have a listing of what's on stage and what West Wisconsin theater companies are doing. And prior to next weekend's Oktoberfest in Chippewa Falls, he'll introduce us to a couple of principals and a young and spirited group of musicians called the Brass Barn Polka Band. And here is where we begin the conversations. There's a new tradition beginning. It's a whole week dedicated to the art of cooking, serving, and eating. Chippewa Valley Restaurant Week is September 15th through 24th and involves a lot of people and a bunch of locations. Volume 1 has connected with Chippewa Valley Technical College to present this vigorous pursuit. We invited Nick Meyer, the resourceful V1 publisher, and Kevin Brown, one of a tandem of chefs helping initiate the CVTC Culinary Management Program, to serve up some delectable oral hors d'oeuvres, beginning with Mr. Meyer and how the recipe was written.
You know, obviously you see in other communities, there are restaurant weeks where you get to go to some cool spots and enjoy some awesome food, maybe for a deal, and celebrate the restaurant scene in a more meaningful way than maybe you do on a regular basis. And certainly in this community, the restaurant scene is growing rapidly, really, as the area develops. And we felt it was high time that the Chippewa Valley was able to celebrate their restaurant scene in the same way and do things that not only celebrate what's there, but maybe inspire each other to do more and to explore a little more as restaurateurs and entrepreneurs, and expect the community to do that same type of exploration as to what the culinary scene can mean around here.
Yeah, you know, on Spectrum West, we have often debated the kinds of things that we should talk about. Arts, humanities, and culture of Western Wisconsin. A few times, food as art has popped up. You know, we should do this on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So you guys are helping us springboard it. We have talked to some chefs. How about you, Kevin? Do you consider food as art? Well, you do is artistic?
I think I do. I like to convey that to my students. That's part of the learning curve. You know, not everybody can create art right out of the box. So we teach the basic skill sets that get students up and running, and then they have to fine-tune that so that it works into art eventually.
I have to admit, every time I come down Claremont about this time of year, that CVTC is a big deal. That's a full parking lot.
Our new culinary building is going to be amazing.
Where's that going to be?
That's going to be here right on the Claremont campus.
Okay.
About 10,000 square feet of kitchen space, which is just amazing to me. And, you know, our ability to get students. And we're going to have about 20 to 25 students every semester running through there.
Wow.
So that's great news for the food scene here in Eau Claire, that we're going to be generating that kind of professional trained help into our local community.
It's called the Culinary Management Program. It's exciting. So tell me about where that came about. Was it initiated out of demand?
It was, and a lot of study behind the scenes. About 10% of our local workforce is hospitality and food and business related, and CVTC prior to this program wasn't really helping out with training. So It was a no-brainer that we needed to do this. They recruited some help, and Jonathan and myself are the two first instructors in the program. And, you know, we're a year out of the program starting, and we're developing the curriculum. Just came from an architectural meeting where we're planning and building the kitchen space. All of that tying into all the stuff that's happening with Restaurant Week and laying the groundwork out there. We have a whole year to get that done. And I think finally I've seen a program that's doing it the exact right way that it should be done. And I'm so proud to be part of CVTC In that way.
And your background?
Well, I've been teaching in the Northwoods for the last 9 years at another culinary program.
Oh, okay.
But prior to that, I've been a chef out east, up and down the East Coast my whole life. In fact, my big feather in my cap is I spent time cooking for President and Mrs. Clinton in Washington, D.C. for a while.
So, you did. Well, then I trust you.
Yeah, quite a few things in my career path. What that does is it allows me to teach to the students where they are and where they want to go. Not everybody wants to own a restaurant. Somebody might open a bake shop or a food truck or all those things. We really try to cater our education to them to where they want to end up.
It may sound weird to say it, but from my vantage point, food, the preparation and enjoyment of it seems to be in somewhat of a renaissance. And it seems to be that eating good food is in vogue.
It is. And I think, you know, with the advent of Food TV, Food Network, events like the Restaurant Week and all of those things, consumers are demanding more. Their expectations are higher. So it's part of my job to deliver that kind of trained professional to the industry here in Eau Claire.
And I think you're seeing an interest in, where the food is coming from and everything as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of great restaurants that you can get an awesome burger and a lot of good food, but there's been a few more coming online in the region now where they're more interested in where that's coming from and having a lot more respect for the process of raising food, growing food, and elevating the farmers that are doing that. And we have a couple of different events that are a part of this event of Restaurant Week that do that. It's just a great way to celebrate that aspect of our growing scene as well.
I've always been interested in where my food came from. I just was never privy to it.
Yeah, right.
People didn't know how to tell me. We're talking with Nick Meyer. He's publisher of Volume 1. You know what that is. And Chef Kevin Brown, one of the duo who was getting the Culinary Management Program underway at CVTC. We're talking about Chippewa Valley Restaurant Week, details of which we'll get to in a moment, September 15th through the 24th. That moment has arrived. The week, by the way, kicks off Thursday, the 14th. A day earlier than the 15th, so I lied on the dates there. The First Taste Culinary Crawl. What's that, Nick?
It is the night before Restaurant Week starts, so the 15th is the real start.
It's Restaurant Week Eve.
Yes, it is. It's Restaurant Week Eve. And so the idea there is just a big party to set things off in the right direction. We have 10 different establishments from throughout the region that are participating with a taste of what they might be doing during Restaurant Week or just a fun offering that they have. They are all participants in the broader week, but it's on the top floor of Building 13 in Banbury Place near downtown Eau Claire. Chance to eat food, have some beverages, there'll be music, it'll be all lit up really cool, and just a chance to celebrate the first ever Restaurant Week.
It's labeled on what's in front of me as a big party.
It is. It's a big party. We'll have a vinyl DJ there. We'll hear from some of the chefs. You'll hear a little bit from Kevin about the program. But really just a chance to hang out, eat some food, and get ready to have a great week.
And we should note that a portion of the ticket proceeds for First Taste benefit the Feed My People Food Bank. And there's an irony to donations made to Feed My People because we're in this event celebrating eating, and we may often take it for granted. And it's not that way for everybody, and hopefully we don't allow the waiter to take away a plate with lots of food left on it. It always irks me when people do that. Food is a necessity for all of us. The moment it becomes a luxury, what happens? Well, we lose perspective. So I guess the Feed My People Food Bank Association is a pretty good one.
Yeah, we were thrilled to do that. I mean, whenever you have something, you laid it out perfectly. We have to be aware of everybody in our community, and that's a great way that we can partner with a good organization doing good work and make sure everybody keeps that in mind as they celebrate Restaurant Week.
I love the fact that in a lot that I read about this event, the word foodie came up. I guess I know foodies.
Mm-hmm.
What's a foodie, Kevin?
A foodie is somebody who's just passionate about food, whether it's the presentation or the taste components or the complexity of flavors and things like that. You ever talk to somebody and you see the sparkle in their eye or they get jazzed when they start talking about food?
Yeah.
Obviously, you would think that students that coming into a culinary program would be foodies. I would imagine folks attending this event will be foodies because they're interested in adventure. That's what this event's going to be. Jonathan and I will be preparing a dessert item that will be flambéing some bananas Foster.
Ooh.
And that ooh that you just said, you're a foodie because that's the response foodies will give you is they get excited when they see and talk about food.
It's the word flambé that actually got me.
And it's fire is always fun, right?
Got me to ooh, yes.
Yeah.
There are other events coming up as part of the week, which we'll get to. But if you Googled foodie, which I did, you'll find lists all the way up to 10 kinds of foodies. My favorite was on a website called Eco Salon. The kinds of foodies are I Made It Myself, the Organivore, the Europhile, the One-Upper, the Snob, the Anti-Snob. You guys can use your imagination on what they mean. The Avoider, the Blogging Food Photographer.
Yes.
Photos have something to do with what you guys are doing.
Sure.
The Bacon Lover.
Oh, yes.
The DIYer. Do-it-yourselfer. A couple others that aren't on the original list. The home delivery foodie and the adventurous foodie. The one that I like the most, however, is called the gastronomical foodie. These people, and I'm reading the definition, are an asset to the foodie community. They try every flavor, every culinary style, and every variation. Variety is the spice of life for them, and owing to them, the names of long-forgotten staple foods will resonate in their social circles.
That's an amazing definition, yeah. I like that one the best, too.
You must be a gastronomical foodie.
I like to try. There's certain limits of things that, there's some shows out there where they go extreme culinary, you know, eating bugs and rodents and other things like that. And I have my line in the sand. The best thing about all of those things, about trying different things, is you learn what you like. And when you learn what you like, you can try more of different versions of what you like. I think that the one snobbery thing that you talked about ties into wine. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of flavor components and taste components in wine that people often associate snobbery with wine tasting. But the basics of wine tasting, too, are you learn what you like. And when you learn what you like, you focus on those varietals. So there's a lot to be said about taste everything you can to learn what you like.
A dilemma that parents have been going through for years.
Yes.
Try a little bit of everything.
Exactly.
Okay, let's at least mention all of the other events. Come Saturday, there is a local farms tour. Nick, you want to hit on that?
Yeah, sure. We've partnered with the Menominee Food Co-op of the Menominee Market. They're taking a bus out, and they're going to hit four different farms in the area, most of which produce food that restaurants in our community use as ingredients and things, but it's a chance to learn more about exactly what we talked about, where food is coming from.
One of which is called the Merry Dirty Face Farm.
Yeah.
I had to make sure that
was... Yep, it's the right name.
What a cool name.
That's a cool thing to partner with them to produce something like that, and that's something we have an eye on expanding as well in the future.
Neat. We had Holly Harden on the show last week, supper time in Lake Wobegon. That is also Saturday. That's in the evening. Then Eau Claire's Culinary Future. There's a food panel coming up on Tuesday the 19th. Kevin, you and Jonathan are involved in that?
Yeah, we're hosting that out at the Energy Conservation Center, one of our other campuses here in Eau Claire. Our intent is to show the public how we're all integrated here in Eau Claire. With our culinary program, we've invited some of our local restaurateurs, we've invited the health department, we've invited some local farmers to show how all of us coming together can help create a better food scene here in Eau Claire. This would be a great opportunity for you to have some insight on how it all comes together and the food ends up on your plate and you end up enjoying yourself. And
neat.
That's really an intent of that function.
That's Tuesday the 19th, starts at 2 o'clock. Nick, you want to talk about the Clearwater Comedy Presents local restaurant trivia?
Yeah, that's just a fun night. They've got a great thing going down there at the Plus. We do all kinds of theme nights, and so we thought it'd be fun to do one on restaurants past and present of this community and some of the dishes they were known for. And whenever we at Volume 1, if you mix nostalgia and you mix food together in an article, it equals enormous page views on a website. So we know that the public loves talking about those old-timey restaurants and as well as current ones and what their favorites are and things. So it's a chance to just answer some questions and win some gift cards to these local restaurants.
I know they did at one time, but does 3M still make Scratch and Sniff?
I don't know.
Because how good would that be in Volume 1?
Yeah, that's a
have a little patch on an ad. Where
2018
you can...
Restaurant Week, we're going to get that on the page.
Bordelais Scratch and Sniff.
Yeah.
That could be a Scratch and Sniff foodie.
Right.
People can also take photos of their food. I actually coined a word. It's called foodos, which is P-H-O-O-D-O-S. Foodos.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, the main way people can participate in Restaurant Week is just by getting out to these nearly 40 different participating restaurants and having a meal. They all have special meals. They have special price points and deals and things. You can do that stuff, or you can just get your favorites that you have there as well.
Okay.
But the main idea is to get out there and explore places you haven't been before, try some dishes you haven't seen before. But going beyond that, you can win things. You can take foodos, as you say, of your dishes and of your server, of your experience overall. And if you hashtag that with the CV Restaurant Week, every day we're going to pick out someone who wins a $25 gift card to one of these participating restaurants. So there's a chance to win big there. But then also we have our passport program.
That's big.
Pick up the passport at any of the participating restaurants across the 10 days of Restaurant Week, and then you have 60 days to get a stamp at 10 of the 40 different restaurants. And when you do, you will be entered to win a trip for two to Mexico, all-inclusive airfare, everything, a four-day trip to a Cancun resort.
The only thing I see missing in this whole thing is a food fight.
But there's another idea for next year.
But I think being a guy who doesn't like to waste food, if you do eventually have one of those, make sure you get some dogs or something to come in and clean up after it's over. Okay?
At least.
Nick Meyer and Chef Kevin Brown, thanks for being with us on Spectrum West. It's called Chippewa Valley Restaurant Week. How do we get info on it?
ChippewaValleyRestaurantWeek.com has everything you'd need. All of the menus, all of the deals, all of the information on what you can win and how you can participate.
Kevin, good luck with the program.
Thanks so much. We'll see you again.
ChippewaValleyRestaurantWeek.com. Online, also on most of the other popular social media sites as well. Good food, good idea. Coming up on Spectrum West, Quality Time with Charlie Parr. A big Saturday in River Falls, and Jim Oliver stops by next. Support for WPR comes from Simply Done in Downsville, home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery influenced by nature, including tableware, vases, and cookingware. More at simply-dunn.com. Support also comes from Visit Winona, offering Shakespeare to bike trails to bluegrass. The city has a wide assortment of entertainment options. A trip planner and events calendar available at visitwinona.com. It's okay to waltz, by the way. Go ahead. That, folks, is the sound of the Brass Barn Band. The music is old. The musicians are young. Here with their story is Jim Oliver.
The 15th annual Oktoberfest will run September 15th through the 17th at the Northern Wisconsin State Fairgrounds in Chippewa Falls. For all intents and purposes, it's a celebration of German culture with live music, family entertainment, friendly competitions, and two beer gardens. Aside from all the other activities during the three-day affair, there will be polka music, lots of bands playing throughout the weekend. Among them will be the Brass Barn Polka Band based in the Twin Cities. Joining us by telephone are the managing partners and co-founders of the Brass Barn Polka Band, tuba player Eric Ebling and Adam Berendt, trumpet player and vocalist. Now, I never miss an opportunity to indulge in self-pity, so almost as long as I've been alive, I've loved what we native Minnesotans refer to as old-time music. Waltzes, schottisches, foxtrots, two-steps, the butterfly, landlers, and mazurkas, in addition to the polka, which is, of course, Wisconsin's state dance. The Brass Barn Polka Band is made up of young men who started playing polkas and eventually grew into an eight-piece ensemble. The group is composed of jazz artists, a jazz composer, classical performers, and a composer for the modern concert hall. Now, Eric, you have a Bachelor of Music degree from the University of Minnesota and have been on stage with the Minnesota Orchestra, and you are a co-founder of the Brass Barn Polka Band, so tell us how this group of musicians came together.
We all started at the University of Minnesota. About 2009 is when we actually started rehearsing. Kind of met Adam around that time. He was from the Pulaski, Wisconsin area. We wanted to start playing some polka music, so we kind of gathered some of our good friends in college and started reading through some books. And we had a passion for polka music and old-time music, as you said. So we have a lot of German heritage and everything in our blood. Like, I grew up in Waukesha, Wisconsin. We have a member that grew up in Pittsburgh, kind of all over the place, and a bunch of members from Minnesota.
I grew up on a small farm in east central Minnesota with lots of barns around there. We had wood barns and stone barns, even some steel barns. But I never came across a brass barn. So where did you come up with the name?
That was the name of our college house. We were filled with brass players, college brass players. So we became the Brass Barn Polka Band. Hmm. And the house was kind of a barn, too, college house, you can imagine.
So anyway, Adam, you hold degrees from the University of Minnesota and from Boston University, and in addition to performing, you're a composer. Have you composed music for the Brass Barn Band?
Yeah, I don't know how many originals we have in there, but we've both done arrangements for it, both pop and jazz and polkas.
Talk about the kind of music you'll be playing at the upcoming Oktoberfest? Will there just be strictly polka music or old-time music, as I like to call it, or will you mix in some pop and classical and folk and all that other stuff?
Probably 90% of what we play will be old-time traditional polkas. And then towards the end of our last set, we'll kind of gauge what time of the day it is, what people are into, and we might pull out some pop music or jazz.
Eric, I was going to ask you, why did you select the tuba? I love a tuba in an old-time band. When I see a tuba, why, I'm all ears. Why did you pick the tuba, and do you play other instruments?
Yeah, so I actually originally started on the euphonium back in fifth grade because my mom was like, we have all the instrument stuff. You can play that or nothing. So I actually started on the euphonium. High school is actually when I started discovering the tuba and realized that there's more of a career with a tuba player than a euphonium player.
Hmm.
And I just fell in love with the sound, and it just came naturally to me.
I have to mention that ancient history at the University of Minnesota, but back in the 60s, I believe, the university marching band took a tour of the then Soviet Union. And a guy named Stanford Fries was a tuba player, and he just enthralled the Soviet audiences. And I remember the band director called him, which was then appropriate, the O.J. Simpson of tuba players. Any of his heritage still around at the university?
Yeah. Actually, when I was in the marching band, he actually came back and was the MC for some of the indoor concerts, I want to say about 2006 and 7. Came back and wore his maroon suit and gold suit and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had a recording of him playing the clarinet polka, and that recording made me want to do that on my senior recital for my music degree.
Ah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was playing on that.
We're talking to Eric Ebeling and Adam Berendt, co-founders and co-managers of the Brass Barn Polka Band. Adam, you were commissioned by the Pulaski School District of Pulaski, Wisconsin, to complete a collection of works for chorus and winds, as well as provide the schools with an alma mater. Do you want to talk about that project?
Sure. What I did for that was arrange something I had done previously for orchestra. This was a while ago. This was back in 2013. D. Tom Bush at Pulaski is my old band director. And when he was kind of looking at when I was getting done with grad school, he approached me right away and said he was interested in a few things. So I offered him those pieces, and I offered him an alma mater. And then actually last year I wrote him a jazz piece. I wrote a concert band piece for Arrowhead High School. I think that's outside of Milwaukee. And the last year I've also done a few short films for some directors in L.A. So I've been pretty busy.
Sounds that way. Eric, I came across a YouTube file of the group playing the Billy Joel song Piano Man recently at the Minnesota State Fair. Do you play a lot of concert venues, or are you primarily a dance band?
We kind of do a little bit of everything. I mean, we do private events, we do weddings, we do Oktoberfest, pretty much everything like that. We have something to offer to any age group. This year, we've been doing a lot of breweries up in the Twin Cities for their big events. They might have, like, some kind of a barbecue going on, some kind of a beer release. We do that. We also do some polka masses. So you name it, we do it. So we have what I call polka pop to go towards the younger crowd, songs that they might know, sing along, but bring the old-time feel to it as a polka or a waltz.
You mentioned polka masses. Those have been controversial at times. Do you have any experience with opposition, perhaps, to your playing a polka mass in a worship situation?
We've only done one with a church up in New Brighton, Minnesota, called St. John the Baptist Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
They love it each year. They have us back. We do a polka mass and then do like a fall festival performance right after it.
I would imagine that if they didn't like it, we wouldn't be asked.
No, probably not. Well, we've been talking to Eric Ebeling and Adam Berendt, co-founders of the Brass Barn Polka Band from the Twin Cities of Minnesota. The band will be appearing at the Chippewa Falls Oktoberfest, Friday, September 15th, at the Northern Wisconsin State Fairgrounds. The Oktoberfest runs through Sunday the 17th. Thanks, Eric and Adam, for coming on and talking to us.
Thank you. Thanks for your interest.
Oktoberfest at the Northern Wisconsin Fairgrounds next weekend. It's so much fun, they have to have it in September because it takes until October to get over it. This, by the way, is the 15th annual event, and if you add a zero, you get the 150th anniversary of Leinenkugel's, so this is one special year. Congratulations to the Chippewa Falls Chamber of Commerce, and thanks to all the marvelous sponsors and volunteers who make it all possible. And thanks, Jim Oliver. You're listening to Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be talking with Charlie Parr and hear something from his new CD called Dog coming up. But first, Art on the Kinney. AOK for short, happens for the 22nd time this Saturday. And there's no better spokesperson from whom to get all we need to know than Steve Preisler, president of the River Falls Community Arts Base. Arts Base, that's an interesting name. It's kind of unique. It sort of describes what it is you guys do. You support other things.
Yeah, it's an all-encompassing word to make sure that, you know, we're not talking strictly about art that you hang on your wall.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about music, because music is a strong part of the community art space with our summer Music in the Park concerts. And then the fact that we have two music stages set up during the day at Art on the Kinney. And we also use musicians for our barn dances.
Arts is a pretty all-inclusive and wide-ranging word. We realize that here, being an arts and culture program that talks about it every week. Tell me what being president of an arts base is like.
Well, in a typical nonprofit, all-volunteer organization,
mm-hmm.
you wind up doing a lot.
I bet.
My main goal when I took the slot was to improve our membership, and so I basically became the chairman. I'm a little bit more fanatical about making sure that when somebody sends a check to CAB, which is short for Community Art Space,
mm-hmm.
when those checks come in, it's my duty to make sure that we promptly follow up with thank yous and with our arts partner card we give to our members, good for discounts at arts partner businesses here in town. And our membership has become, you know, an important part of it, and it has grown steadily with that kind of attention. I think that's a key thing. If somebody's going to send you money, you ought to be able to quickly respond and tell them thank you for supporting the arts in River Falls.
Sensible to me. And I think it's correct in assuming that after 22 years, a lot of the wrinkles have been ironed out. Although, you know, whenever you deal with someone as involved as the Community Arts Base in River Falls, you're always diving into new things, so there are always new challenges. You mentioned Music in the Park earlier. It's over for this year. Did you have a good summer?
Yes, we had a real nice schedule. David Marks and one of the founding members of CAB and actually the community theater here in town. David schedules those with the committee and does a good job. I would say the only thing, we got bit by the weatherman a couple of times, which meant we had to move into a smaller space indoors, which isn't quite as neat as our outdoor pop-up band shell that we have in Veterans Park. It's a really neat place for a concert.
It used to be that Mother Nature got nailed when something went wrong. Now people are blaming the weatherman. That's Mother Nature must have lobbied to have that changed.
If you want me to blame it on Mother Nature, I will.
I think they go in tandem, actually. Steve Preisler is with us. He's president of the River Falls Community Arts Base. We're here specifically to talk about the 22nd annual Art on the Kinney. It's coming up Saturday. It's from 9 to 5 in some wonderful locations in River Falls. The Community Art Space is committed to sustaining the arts and ensuring they are available, accessible, and affordable to the greater River Falls community. Let's touch on all the things you guys do. Since 1996, CAB has sponsored such events as the annual Spring Art Gala, Music in the Park, CAB Barn Dances, Art on the Kinney, we're going to get to that, Main Street Art Crawl, and much more. Tell me about Artful Friday. What's that?
Actually, we opened a gallery in a new location that we're in. It's called Arts House. We schedule artists every month to show their work, and when we have our gallery opening, it's a Friday night, and we call that Artful Friday. And the artists who are displaying for that month are usually there to greet the people and talk a little bit about their art, and we serve a few snacks and make an event out of it. So Artful Friday is basically our way of showing off our gallery and the new artists that come in each month.
Good. I'm glad I asked. Sounds like fun. Let's now dive into Art on the Kinney. Here's the impressive part, folks. 65 artists. Maybe it's just a ballpark figure. Maybe it's even more than that. Live music on two stages, kids' activities, food vendors, and more. And again, it's coming up Saturday. The venues, Steve Heritage Park, the Band Shelter at Veterans Park, also the Kenneth and Helen White Pathway. Most of what? The art is along the pathway?
Yes. The art actually starts in Heritage Park and then goes down. And basically, the correct name for the pathway is the Kinnikinnick Trail White Pathway.
Okay.
And so there's a small stretch on the very end of the pathway that is the Kenneth and Helen White Pathway. But the main part that we're on is the Kinnikinnick Trail White Pathway. And it runs from Heritage Park all the way out to the parking lot across from the power plant. Most of the booths along the pathway, and we actually have this year, when you recount everything, many booths that have husband and wife teams or, you know, other partners that share in the artwork. So we actually have 75 artists that'll be on hand, including on our budding artist bridge, young or even older artists who are just getting going and aren't really prolific enough to fill up a 10-by-10 tent. They can set up on the bridge leading from Veterans Park into Heritage Park and show their stuff, and it's gotten to be pretty popular. We have 6 budding artists this year, and something that's kind of neat also, we have a gentleman who's a long-time participant in Art on the Kinney who a few years ago had a fire at his residence, and he actually had his hands burned. His name is Harold Henson, and he's going to be on one end of the bridge for his final show of his career, and we call it, affectionately, we call that end of the bridge Harold's Corner.
All right. A very nice gesture. You know, the thing that I find most impressive about the Community Arts Base, and I bolded this in the notes in front of me, we are always looking for new projects. Some arts groups that have been around a long time, they have a problem finding new people, or it's a challenge finding people to pass it on. You're always looking for new stuff to do. That's pretty impressive.
We're always looking for people. We have a nice selection of volunteers, especially for Art on the Kinney. When you talk about new projects, one of the things we got involved in, I think this is our third year this year, the Powerful Choices Division of our River Falls Municipal Utilities came up with an idea to paint the transformer boxes along the Main Street area, especially the ones that are really visible, those ugly boxes, asking for graffiti to be put on them. And we now have right around 12 boxes here in town that have artists work on them that brighten up our downtown area.
Yeah.
And help make us the art place that we want River Falls to be known as.
Shows you how innovative the people in River Falls are. And yes, the Community Arts Base is always looking for new blood. Steve Preisler, I appreciate you being with us here on Spectrum West. We will disseminate all the pertinent information and details about Art on the Kinney. Congratulations on the time and energy that you put into the Community Arts Base. Thanks again for being with us.
Well, you're very welcome. And let me just say that Mother Nature, weatherman person.
Yes.
The forecast, sunny and 72.
Well,
what's not to like about Art on the Kinney?
Okay. Well, that deserves a big A-O-K, which is the abbreviation for Art on the Kinney. Saturday in beautiful and bubbly River Falls, Wisconsin. It's from 9 to 5, art, food, music, the big three. And more. Next in line on Spectrum West, the music and the man, the one, the only, Charlie Parr. Support for WPR comes from Caradori Pottery, celebrating over 30 years of art in the Chippewa Valley, with a show representing potters with over 30 years of experience. It's September 30th, 10 to 4, at Caradori Pottery in Eau Claire. Time for more Jim Oliver and What's on Stage in Western Wisconsin.
Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson will stage the Savannah Sipping Society, opening September 15th and playing weekends through October 1st. Also in Hudson, Come Blow Your Horn will open Friday, September 15th and continue weekends through October 28th at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater. The Children of Mystery River, a play developed by stage and screen arts students at the University of Wisconsin-River Falls, will be staged Friday through Sunday and the following Thursday through Sunday at the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild has scheduled auditions for Wait Until Dark at 7 p.m. Monday and Tuesday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. And the Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls has scheduled auditions for Last Lists of My Mad Mother for 6:30 p.m. Monday. There are roles for three women. The Heidi Center has also scheduled auditions for Bill W. and Dr. Bob for 6:30 p.m. Monday. There are major roles for two men and two women, and smaller roles for five women and eight men. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Appreciate it. Spectrum memo for you. The fourth Yellowstone Art Trail features 33 artists at 15 locations in the Cadott, Boyd, and Eastern Lake Wissota area of Chippewa Falls. It's Friday and Saturday from 9 to 5. Brochures with maps available at area businesses, or you can view it online at yellowstonearttrail.blogspot.com. Also, Sunday is Grandparents' Day at the L.A. Phillips Public Library in Eau Claire. You can drop in from 1:30 to 3 p.m. for games, crafts, a photo booth, and more. That sounds like fun. Hey, you know, Charlie Parr is called a virtuoso by many, but that might be too fancy a word. He'll probably settle for musician, and friend would fit him nicely. He's been a philanthropist of the highest degree. Working with the homeless and less fortunate has made him and his music much richer. His roller coaster has taken him to high places and some low places. And his music, according to his record company, quote, has a way of carving a path straight to the gut.
How do you know that I don't have a soul? How can you look me in the eye? Tell me no, soul is a soul is a soul.
Friday is the official release date of Charlie Parr's new CD, Dog, and we're privileged to get a first-person scoop. Well, last time you and I spoke, it was June of 2015. You were visiting your mom.
Oh, yeah.
And you had just released Stump Jumper,
right.
A bunch of songs recorded in North Carolina. Your new CD, Dog, had you back in a Minnesota studio.
Right.
You've said something about recording studios making you uncomfortable. Is that still the case, or were you comfortable back in your old digs in Minneapolis?
Well, it's still more or less the case. I mean, this particular recording studio is associated with one of my very best friends, Tom Herbers, who engineered the record. You know, because of his involvement, it made it a lot easier to deal with it. You do kind of go in there and you feel at ease. You know, part of a, you know, feeling good about somewhere where you are is the people that are that are involved, and has been someone who's been there for a lot of my life just to make me feel better about, you know, cool. stuff that I've been doing.
I didn't compare the two CDs to see about musicians who contributed on each. Did guys travel with you down to North Carolina, or was that homegrown guys down there?
That was all guys from down there, okay. And this is folks from up here. The only traveler we really had on this session was Jeff Mitchell, who came from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to do it. Everybody else was either Duluth or Minneapolis.
Do you test songs with live audiences before including them on a CD, or are they bright, shiny, and new when you record them?
I don't test them. And part of it is songs aren't really ever done anyway, so it almost wouldn't much matter what anybody thought about them, because the next time they hear them, they're going to be different.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so once they kind of show up in my life, and I get them to the point where I feel like they're, you know, a keeper, you know, I play them. They get affected by the shows. They get affected by how my life's going when I play them. They get affected by the audience.
Hmm.
They get affected by the recording process itself, you know, because suddenly I'm in the studio with people who are bringing their own thing to a song, and so they change it again, you know. And then you leave the studio with this recording, but it's not the definitive version of anything. It's just another moment in this song's evolution. And then you go out to the next show, and the song is totally different all over again. So songs are like that for me. They're works in progress kind of all the time. When they're good ones, they feel like they're always a process and never a product, which is unique compared to, like, you know, a writer or a painter who writes a book or paints a picture, and there it is, it's done. You know, I get to kind of paint my picture all over again every single night, in a way.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting way of saying it. Your songs just show up. It's like someone rings the doorbell, and there it is.
Yeah, that's how it feels. I've tried to write songs where I've said, I want to write a song about such and such, and sit down and try to write a song, and it's terrible. You know, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then you wait around long enough, and it must have to have some kind of incubation period, because pretty soon the song will show up and it might be about exactly what you were thinking about, you know.
Your new CD is called Dog. Any departure on this CD, or adjustment, or any swerves in the road that you've taken with this group of tunes?
Well, a little bit. I mean, I've kind of gone, in a way, I've gone a little bit backwards, because, you know, on Stump Jumper, we ended up using more of a traditional kind of rhythm section with a bass and a drum set, a piano player. But on Dog, I went kind of back in little ways to using, you know, jug band style percussion, washboards, and a harmonica player, and then also a bass player and a very, very experimental electric guitar player. And so it feels like a blending of a couple of different worlds, and ended up with at least three moments on the record that got very improvisational. And I really like that vibe that we ended up with, even though, you know, it's a funny thing to do, because you have a song, and then you have, you know, you have the bare framework of a song, and then all of a sudden you have, you know, the rails just kind of disappearing and people doing whatever they want to do, and
yeah.
It gets weird, but it seemed to fit for some reason.
The inimitable Charlie Parr with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio and Spectrum West. I used inimitable simply because I wanted to say that word. It's such a cool word to say. Let's riff on Dog for a while. You are good friends with your dog. You have two songs on this new CD of the Canine Persuasion, Dog, and then Another Dog. I was going to ask if you can put your relationship with your dog into words, and then I thought, well, maybe he's already done that.
Well, the song Dog, at the end of the day, it's not so much about dogs as it is about myself.
Okay.
But in another sense, it's very much about the relationship I have with my dog. You know, it's about that moment in my life when I was taking my dog for a walk, and, you know, we'd go down the street where we always go and turn left and go down and turn right, you know, the kind of our little route, you know. And then I realized that the dog really wasn't interested in going that way and kept wanting to go a different way. And I thought, you know, this is the only chance this dog gets to go outside. I get to go out whenever I want. You know, why am I dictating where the walk goes, since I can go out and take a walk whenever I want to? So I just started following this dog around. And
yeah.
And it was a great walk. She took me all over the place, and we stopped and smelled stuff and ended up in places that I didn't really expect us to be. And it kind of taught me a little bit of a lesson about humility, and that got into that song quite a bit.
That's very neat. I've always thought that humans ought to do more smelling on their walks with their dogs, too.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was cool. Now, Charlie, if my math serves me well and what I've read online is accurate, you're eligible for AARP membership this year.
Yeah, I'm only 50. I think it's 54.
No, it's 50, man. You can be an ARP member at 50 now.
Oh, that's great.
Good for you.
I'm
going to
get my card, man. I'm very comfortable with this. You know, I've had enough rowdiness, and I'm ready to just kind of, exist for a little while. 50 was not a bad transition for me so far.
Good. One song title on the new CD seems to address reaching the traditional hump year of life. I Ain't Dead Yet, at least the title.
That's inspired by Doc Boggs, who had wrote a song called Roses While I'm Living, which is that same exact sentiment, basically, is we do a lot of memorializing sometimes for people that we didn't pay a lot of attention to when they were alive. And the whole thought came to me when I was visiting my aunt before she died in a respite care nursing home, and just walking through the halls and seeing people just everywhere, and you walk by them and they'd look up with this, kind of half expectant look on their face. And it must be a long day, waiting to see if anybody's going to come and see if you're there,
Sure.
I know life is busy and it goes by awfully fast, but, we're all going to get to that point where we're waiting around to see if anybody remembers if we're there or not.
Just like a dog waiting for you to get home.
Exactly.
So how is the music of Charlie Parr different on your golden birthday than it was, for instance, the silver occasion?
It's not substantially different. I mean, it is and it isn't. I mean, maybe it's deepened and broadened, or maybe it's gotten a little raggedier, but I've always been primarily interested in making this kind of music. The music that I was listening to when I was 8 years old, the stuff I was digging out of my dad's record collection, is the music that still moves me the most.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, just on this last trip, I was in the car listening to the digital version of the Lightning Hopkins record that my dad had in his collection. It just lights my fire every single time I hear it. And I've never, when I sit down and play the guitar, I think maybe I've developed some better techniques and I've learned some new songs and I can do some stuff that I couldn't do before. But essentially the sounds that I want to make are the sounds that I wanted to make when I started to play the guitar. And in a way, I feel very, very lucky. And I don't feel particularly, hemmed in by that. I'm trying to learn some new stuff. I'm trying to learn how to play the electric guitar.
Ah.
And that's been a challenge for me. But we'll see how it
goes. I'll bet you'll end up doing some pretty innovative stuff on the electric guitar once you're comfortable with it. Because I don't think you'll settle for just Charlie Parr playing the electric guitar. You'll want to do something with it.
Well, I was told by a really, really smart friend of mine that this instrument is not the same as what I play, and it's the same as, when you go from a resonator guitar to, say, a 12-string acoustic guitar, they're very different instruments.
Yeah.
They're both guitars, but they're just guitars, in the same way that, two different kinds of dogs are both dogs, it's really different. So approaching the electric guitar has been learning what it does and learning how to manipulate it so I can get its best sounds out of it instead of just playing the usual stuff on it. So
yeah.
It's been really fun. It's keeping me feeling like I'm in the game.
I looked at your tour dates coming up. Your schedule is pretty eclectic. Everything from New Munster, Wisconsin to Nashville, New York, and Washington, D.C., small towns and big towns. Do you find that crowds differ in different sized towns, or are they all kind of the same?
I think a little bit of both. I mean, I don't know what it's like being like in a rock band or anything. Being a folk singer, you do end up with a certain like type of folks who come out to the shows, and sometimes it's really strangely samey from like Manhattan to Britt, Iowa. But other times you get a more kind of eclectic. So it does vary, but the thing that's always the same is I've been really lucky. I've had a very, very kind and, tolerant audience. So
yeah.
I've felt really, really supported by the people that have come out to see me play. Yeah.
I'm glad I looked at your dates because I had no idea where New Munster, Wisconsin was. Now I do.
Yeah, just outside of Racine, I think.
Is this kind of what you do? Is it like every other year you like to record something, or is this just the way it happened?
This is just the way it happens. I figure when I've got something that I feel good about, I want to put it out, you know, and this is how it's been going. I've been really lucky. You know, when the well dries up, you know, I won't try to force it. You know, I don't think I know how, but so far I've been lucky enough to be able to keep on going.
Charlie Parr, thanks for being with us. It's so much fun to talk to you, and it's I don't know whether it's more fun or equally fun to listen to your music. You're an icon, man. And keep in touch with us at WPR. We'd appreciate that. Keep bringing us the good stuff.
Well, thank you for talking with me today. I appreciate that.
Rich food has made you soft. Easy living has made you weak. Rich food has made you soft. Easy living has made you weak. Time for waiting has gone by. That's the reason I've got to leave. That's the reason I've got to leave. She was 20 when she met him, 40 years old when she had to go, 20 when she met him, 40 years old when she had to go.
Charlie Parr, the new CD is called Dog, and as of Friday, it'll be at your favorite local store. And at all the places online where fine music is available, Red House Records, Amazon, iTunes, etc., etc., etc. Have fun. It's what Charlie wants you to do with his music. Well, that'll put a ribbon around another edition of Spectrum West. Next week, another one and only, Jamie Farr. Remember Klinger on MASH? Yeah, that's him. He's coming to the Mabel Tainter in Menominee as part of a special Tuesdays with Maury presentation. We're going to be talking with him. Plus, we're going down on the farm again. I love those trips. Thanks to Hinderleiter, Spranger, and Collenbach. If that's not a law firm, it should be. Could be a powerful shingle. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. Thanks. See you next week.